Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom.
Good morning and welcome to our program. Today we would like to talk about Benjamin Creme's book titled Messages from Maitreya the Christ. And in the book is a transcript of 140 messages as given through Benjamin Creme. He explains in the book that early in September 1977, I was taken before Maitreya. And Maitreya, if you're familiar with our program, is also called the World Teacher. And he is living in London incognito, and when the time is right, will be announcing himself. Anyway, back to this quote. I was taken before Maitreya, who asked if I would take publicly communications from him, which, since 1974, I had received in the privacy of the group with which I work. On September 6, 1977, the first public message was given at Friend's House in Euston Road, London. And Mr. Creme says, "The messages are relayed by me to the audience. No trance or mediumship is involved, and the voice is mine, strengthened in power and altered in pitch by the overshadowing energy of Maitreya. They are transmitted simultaneously on all the astral or emotional and mental planes, while I supply the basic etheric physical vibration for this to take place. From these subtle levels, the messages impress the minds and hearts of countless people who are gradually made aware of the thoughts and the presence of the Christ. He releases in this way fragments of his teaching to prepare the climate of hope and expectancy which will ensure his being accepted and followed quickly and gladly." In the March 2014 issue of Share International magazine, Mark Gregory from California, who is a musician and longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom teaching, reviewed this book, and here to follow is his review. "Many readers of Share International magazine and those who have followed the reappearance story for some time will have read and reread these messages from Maitreya, turning to them over and again for inspiration, guidance, and solace. Yet, however familiar we may have become with them, it is worth noting how extraordinary it is that they exist at all, that the world teacher, Maitreya, might choose to address humanity in this way, that is, through the agency of a uniquely qualified man, as a part of his effort to reacquaint us with himself and proclaim the fact of his presence in the modern world. In the time since these messages were first given, which was between autumn 1977 and spring 1982, much has changed, yet much remains to be done before we are living in the kind of planetary community that Maitreya envisions. There is no doubt then that his advent is an event of unprecedented significance, nothing less than a turning point for the world and the future of all life upon it. And because of the significance of the event and the nature of the messages themselves, it is something of a challenge to write about them." And Mark Gregory goes on to say that some years ago, in his spare time, a young man would occasionally browse through a New Age bookstore he knew of not far from his home. Not being particularly well informed on spiritual matters, but having a certain distaste for organized religion, he nevertheless kept seeing an unusual-looking book with a large silver-lined red diamond set against a vivid blue background on the cover, with the title Messages from Maitreya the Christ. Every time he found himself meandering through the bookstore, this particular volume would quietly draw his attention. At first, owing to a certain skepticism, he really had no interest at all. "Maitreya," he thought, "who on earth could that be?" After a few more visits, no matter what path he took ambling through the store, he always seemed to end up looking at the red diamond on the blue background. Something like, "Just buy it, will you?" kept running through his head. So he bought the book. It probably isn't difficult to figure out that that young man was me, and it certainly isn't that my personal experiences are so important, except for the fact that they, or something like them, are probably shared by many as they first come into contact with these messages. Needless to say, I did read them, and in so doing, my initial skepticism disappeared, completely overwhelmed as I was by their extraordinary power, simplicity, and profundity of utterance. They seem to bypass all the inhibitory tendencies of the mind and strike a resonant chord on a much deeper level, or on all levels at once. It is not unimportant that this is so. These messages cut right to the heart of the most seemingly complex and tractable issues and boldly point a way out. Not only do we live in a world saturated with unnecessary fear that grips most of us in large ways and small, but, partially as a result of that fear, much of the human race has become mired in inaction. We love to discuss, we love to conduct studies, to inquire, to complicate, when we claim to be elucidating, to debate, and to constantly toss issues back and forth. In essence, we love to talk, remaining mired in equivocation and inertia. And indeed, there are those who would like nothing more than to see this vainglorious inactivity continue ad infinitum. And here's a quote from message number 52. "The problems of men are real but solvable. Take your brother's need as the measure for your action and solve the problems of the world. There is no other course." In that succinct statement, volumes are spoken. In it lies a tremendous antidote and a challenge to our paralysis and inertia. And in that statement also lies the central theme of Maitreya's message, one that he returns to again and again, the principle of sharing. Maitreya speaks with focused power and clarity about the monumental, agonizing injustice of dire poverty and its proliferation throughout the world, of how that poverty is completely unnecessary, and of how its existence is an affront to our essential nature and to the nature of reality itself. And here's another quote, this time from message number 81. "How can you be content with the modes within which you now live, when millions starve and die in squalor, when the rich parade their wealth before the poor, when each man is his neighbour's enemy, when no man trusts his brother? For how long must you live thus, my friends? For how long can you support this degradation?" Our fear and our problems derive from a flaw in our collective perception. We have yet to grasp an essential reality of life, that we are one. And here's another quote from message number 11. "Firstly, men must see themselves as brothers, sons of the one Father. This is essential if they would progress one step nearer the Godhead." And two more quotes. "For only insofar as man correctly relates to man, does he so relate to God." And, "The crime of separation must be driven from this world. I affirm that as my purpose." Were we to actually see reality the way Maitreya and the Masters see it, we would gladly forego the crime of separation and all the misery to which it leads. All over the world, more and more people, as a response to the energy he embodies and that he and the Masters radiate, sense this and are increasingly convinced that life can and must be infinitely better than it presently is. This from message number 107. "The major need today is for the transformation of the structures within which you now live. Your civilization, my friends, is dying. Nay, it is already dead. Out of its ashes will grow a new beauty whose basis is love, justice, and sharing." No matter how pointed or blunt Maitreya is in certain passages concerning the state of the world and the dangers we face, he also never fails to inspire and encourage. He repeatedly reminds us of who we truly are and what we can do to regain our poise and reconnect with our essential nature. And here's another couple of quotes. In fact, I've got four quotes in a row here. "My plan is to realize within you that which you truly are, to show you that you stem from the Godhead itself, and to that divine source must return." And despite the signs, the changes are occurring. Despite the tension, my love is spread abroad. Know this and be at peace within yourselves and raise the hope of men. And smilingly, turn your gaze on the future. Laughingly, turn your back on the past. Gratefully receive the blessing of God's love and create anew the plan. And my mission begins. Already much is accomplished. Soon the tide will turn and men will sense and respond in joy to my presence. The tremendous tension in the world notwithstanding, there is no doubt that since these words were first spoken, many things have changed for the better. There is a new and fresh impetus for real justice, especially among young people who increasingly want no part of the divisive, warlike ways of the past. Protests like the Arab Spring some years ago and the Occupy movements across the globe, the development of the internet and the capacity for information and images to go viral in literally minutes are connecting peoples around the world in ways heretofore unimagined. In his call for true peace, brotherhood and justice, Maitreya states, and this is from message number 8, "When I make myself known, I shall express the hope of all mankind for a new life, a new start, a readiness to change direction, to see the construction of a new world in which men can live in peace, can live free from fear of themselves or their brothers, free to create from the joy in their hearts, free to be themselves in simple honesty." In approximately 100 or more probably by now television interviews given, always incognito, Maitreya has, it would seem, done precisely that. And as he continues with his emergence, there is an exhortation that appears expressed in various ways in almost every message. "If you would serve me and serve the world, make known, my friends, that I am here." That's from message number 69. Maitreya is certain that humanity will make the right choices, that we will follow his and the Master's guidance and do what is necessary to transform the world. And here's a quote from message number 77. "I know that within men sits a divine being whose plan it is that love and justice should triumph. This being so, the end is assured." Or in the words of Benjamin Krem, "One day this planet will shine like a diamond in the heavens." There are also passages so ineffably moving, so profoundly expressive, that they seem to simply stop time. Every careful reader will find several or many of his or her own. Passages like, "Look for me in the dark places where hunger and strife abound. Know me as the brother of the poor, the rejected of the world. See me thus, my friends and brothers, and see the Lord of love." That's from message number 128. Clearly, the value of these messages is not confined solely to the information conveyed by the words themselves. The choice of words, their placement in context, the rhythm and the flow of the language, and the way Maitreya returns to the same ideas expressed in different ways all give the messages a mantric quality. Thus, as Benjamin Krem points out in the foreword to his book, they can be used to focus personal and group meditations. In fact, many of our transmission meditation groups will play one of the recorded messages before we begin each regular meditation. And they're vehicles for serious and prolonged contemplation and a means of powerfully invoking his energy and some measure of his attention. Also, while in many of the messages Maitreya presents himself as a simple man, the great friend of old, the elder brother of the human race, in every tenth one he speaks more expansively about his true stature as the one awaited by all of humanity, as the living embodiment of the Christ principle on earth, as the avatar for the age of Aquarius. This from message number 70. I am the saviour of old. I am the teacher of the new. I am the guide for the future time. I am the law embodied. I am truth itself. I am your friend and brother. I am yourself. The more expansive tone of every tenth message gives the entire set an overarching mantric rhythm and quality, amplifying upon the rhythms of the individual messages. It cannot have been an easy task to have descended from his ancient retreat in the Himalayas from a level of consciousness so heightened and so exalted, and to take up the burden of teaching and revitalizing a world so lost, so steeped in materialism, greed, ancient hatreds and conflicts. It cannot be easy to undertake to guide the likes of us, we who have gone so far adrift and have so much to learn and relearn. Nevertheless, out of his great love for humanity, for the potential gods that he sees we are, and because of his role as custodian of the divine plan and as God's lieutenant, he gladly again takes up his burden. Perhaps that is as much as needs be said. Surely nothing written about the messages could possibly substitute for one's reading and experiencing them firsthand, for they speak more than eloquently for themselves. And perhaps they remind us of nothing more important than this from Maitreya. Take heart, my friends, all will be well. All manner of things will be well. That was the end of that article by a group member over in the US, published in Cherish National magazine. We have another article here, and unfortunately it looks like you won't be able to read much of it, but I will start reading the beginning at least, and it's from an article titled Maitreya's Messages, What Does He Ask of Us? And it's by Patricia Pichon, who's a freelance journalist and a translator and author of a book called Searching for Maitreya. It's from the January-February 2021 issue of Cherish National magazine and begins, too often we ask much of spiritual teachers and guides, or of whatever divine power we may believe in, but how often do we think of and implement, however imperfectly, what is asked of us? Our excuses to ourselves range from, that is too difficult, why should I even try, to, oh yes, I will try that sometime, and then the intention slips away. Maitreya's messages have some unique characteristics. Each one has a certain declamatory style, full of gravitas, yet there is often a direct, almost intimate approach and a simplicity entirely devoid of pomposity. In his very first message, Maitreya addresses people as my brothers and sisters, and also as my children, my friends. He also tells us, my manifestation is complete and accomplished. I am verily in the world. He adds, but there is much to do, much that needs changing in the world. Many hunger and die, many suffer needlessly. And further, I come to change all that, to show you the way forward, into a simpler, saner, happier life, together. No longer man against man, nation against nation, but together, as brothers, shall we go forth into the new country. And unfortunately, that does seem to be all we have time for. If you would like to read the full article, email us at sharenz@yahoo.com and we can email it to you. In fact, if you would like a free copy of Share International magazine, again, you can email us at that address. Thank you very much for listening in today, and we wish you a lovely week.